Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Carl from ISF and Films and Stuff. And here we are with a commentary watch for Pride Month. And to be honest, I'm not that thrilled with this one. We'll talk about it here in a moment. But first, I would like to introduce two of my guests, and hopefully Robert Walker will join us also. He's due in. The first one is Patrick Crane. Patrick, you know from the podcast, film historian and writer out of Oklahoma City. Say hello, Patrick.
Hello, everybody. Hello, hello, hello.
Oh, and here. I'm going to introduce our next guest, and he just joined us, and that would be filmmaker Robert Walker. Robert, how are you, sir?
Oh, I'm good. Everything's good. I'm ripping ready to go. Everything's fine. So just ready to get started.
All right. See what you guys. We'll give everyone a chance at the end to promote what they're doing and so on and so forth before we get off the air here. But I'd like to introduce someone very special to this particular podcast. This gentleman has been after me for, what, 5 or 6 years to do a commentary on cruising, which is 7 years. 7 years. And this would be my former podcast partner, good friend, and just insane person whom I love dearly, and that would be Stephen Ronquillo. Stephen, say hello.
Hello, everybody. Yes, it's been 7 years since I've been regaling him to do this. But yeah. I've punished him in my own special ways every Thanksgiving.
We don't want to get into that right now, Stephen. So anyway, we are going to be watching Cruising. Cruising is a very controversial film from 1980. Now, if you were here earlier in the month, Patrick and I did a watch of Windows, which is another very controversial film. And then, of course, the De Palma film came out. What was the name of that? The De Palma film?
Dress to Kill.
Yeah. Dress to Kill.
Okay.
And yeah, I was having a brain fart there. Sorry, guys.
No problem.
But this particular film has, over the years, gotten a reassessment. But certainly at the time, it was not embraced by the LGBTQ community. I think you'll understand why as we watch it. Though I will have to say that it is well done. It's just not my cup of tea. It is available for rental over at Amazon, and that's the way I'm going to be watching it. So give me a moment and let me just set it up here over at Amazon. And if you have
a Blu-ray. I have a wonderful-looking Blu-ray that Arrow put out that doesn't have any of the color fiddling that Freakin' decided to do for the DVD.
Right.
No.
Okay. And I am set up. Is everyone set up for the film?
Yeah.
Yeah, all I got to do is hit 24-hour rental for $3.
Okay, do that, and then get to the black screen, and then let me know when you're at the black screen.
Okay.
Because I'm at 000 at the black screen on Amazon.
I'm at watch now.
Okay, hit watch now, and you'll get to a black screen and stop it right there and then.
I'm at the part where they go over the studio slowly, and now I just get out of it.
Pause and go back to 000.
I'm at the part where it's just completely black.
Yeah. That's where we want to be.
I just did something weird. Hold on a second. Let me see. Now I lost it. Hold on a second. I hit the wrong button on my Alexa. Oh, great.
professionalism.
Yeah, so really
hot
programming. Really great programming here. Hold up, let's see.
Patrick, are you set up?
Yes, I am set up.
So you say go all the way to black? Okay.
Yeah, 000. You want it at 000.
Yeah, I got it at 000.
There we go. Okay, we're going to start 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go. We hit play on go, all right? 5,
okay.
Oh, I started.
4, 3, 2, 1, go. And there you got the Warner Brothers studio.
Yes. Warner Brothers Pictures.
I'm Warner
okay.
Company.
Yeah, not
all.
All.
And now you see Cruz in the title start.
Yep, we're all there.
Okay.
Mine has like little black and white pictures of. Mine had no Warner Brothers, but it had them showing outside of the club, and then Al Pacino's in the cruising, and now it's going to William Friedkin's cruising.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
so now we should be at a exterior of New York City, and a boat going
through. Yeah, that's
okay.
The boat
right here
by.
Is where Friedkin based it on the bag murders. It was a series of murderers from about 76 to 79, where they kept finding bags in the New York River with parts of bodies. And the parts were connected to people who were members of the gay community, so the cops really didn't investigate it that much.
Oh, this happened in real life?
Oh,
yeah.
At least it's based on in real life.
Oh, wow. Now they're showing the arm and the
right.
morgue. Whatever
By the way, do you know who the one guy is with the mustache? I think it's Joe Spano.
No, it's Sonny Grosso.
No.
Is that
it's
Sonny
not
Grosso?
Sonny Grosso.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's not Sonny Grosso.
I don't know who
that's
that is.
That's not Sonny. He is a cop, but that's not Sonny Grosso. Sonny Grosso is in this movie, but that's not him. This guy was also in The French Connection. He was also in Sorcerer. He was a cop, but yeah, no, that's not Sonny Grosso. I'll point out Sonny Grosso when you see him.
Cuppy. Spinell.
Yeah.
Spinell. We love Spinell.
And Mike Starr.
C-U-P-I.
Yeah, both Starr's brother.
God, he is just so creepy here, just with his voice.
Yeah. Dirty cop.
Well,
and if you notice, any of the hateful dialogue in this movie is only said by cops.
Right. The other thing about this movie is that a lot of dialogue in this movie has been ADR'd. It was looped in post-production because so many of the protests that went on in protest of the production movie, they screamed so loudly it screwed up the soundtrack. So they had to go back in a lot of this movie and re-record it.
They screamed loudly.
Wow.
They banged on coffee cans, whatever they could to make noise and disrupt the production.
Wow.
Come in.
Who was in Midnight Express, the star? That's his brother right there, playing the blonde.
Oh, really?
Brad Davis. Oh, Brad Davis is Brad Davis.
Yeah, Brad
Davis'
right. brother.
Oh, wow. I didn't know his brother was in this business. Or was in the
See?
Business or whatever.
Now, this type of harassment was common. And sure, I know several people who have been harassed who were gay or you know, at this point they would be called, in this time, drag queens. But let's just say trans.
Right. Yeah, they were getting harassed a lot, I'm sure.
You know,
the cops are spouting out this homophobic dialogue to try to cover up what they're going to be doing in 30 seconds.
Right. It's really ridiculous.
You know, and that was part of Friedkin's defense of the film. You know, because the cops certainly were not shown in a good light here, and that the gay community was a victim. They were victims.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
and look,
true.
The killer walks
right
by them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we're referring, because they really don't show...
Well, look, that's how the scene was back then. I guess there is a scene around now, but...
The leather bar
scene,
that's the dark, dark scene.
Yeah.
Right.
And these are, you know, this was shot in an actual leather bar, and these were actual patrons of that place. I mean, these weren't like extras from Central.
Yeah, all Friedkin did was just tell them, be yourselves. And they did.
Wow, that's why it seems so authentic, though, basically, right? Like it wasn't any actors.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I was just going to go there, Stephen. This would not be the music that was there. Oh, hankies. We'll talk about hankies later.
Mm-hmm.
Powers Booth's going to talk about hankies later.
Yes, absolutely. We love that scene.
And this is the Al Pacino lookalike almost, right?
Yeah.
Hey, the Gimp! Manhunt.
I want to quit. I suggest you try another form of chocolate stroke. I suggest you try an object defender along with
the And what's funny is this is not the actor's voice who's being actor.
Point
out the guy who does the voice later in the film. And this is an intentional thing. I bring up another weird point, which comes up later. But, yeah, you're right. That's supposed to be an Al Pacino lookalike, because that's why they get Al Pacino to go undercover, because he fits
the killer's radar.
Yeah, the profile.
St. James Hotel. I know where that is.
Isn't that like
was,
infamous,
anyway.
Right? A lot of people got killed there,
extremely.
Right? Murder or God. Yeah.
Maybe they got killed because it was next to a Radio Shack.
This is weird. Like, wouldn't you be like, hey, why are you just not been looking? What's the, what do you call that stuff, the sniffing stuff? Poppers.
Anal nitrate.
Yeah, poppers. Anal nitrate.
Yeah.
Poppers, anal nitrate.
That used to be sold in any respectable sex store.
Oh, yeah.
And this was like, it would be so regular right now, this scene. But back then, I guess it was really kind of scandalous.
Well, 1980,
wasn't in the R-rated cut that was in theaters. None of us seen this stuff until
it
hit VHS.
Oh.
This scene was in the theaters. The stuff that got cut out of the theatrical version are the scenes of pornographic from the porn films that are intercut.
Those penetration scenes
with the knives, okay. That was cut out of the theatrical release, but not this stuff wasn't. This was in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I can imagine from the straight community, were they protesting against it as well, the movie?
No.
Actually, they weren't watching it.
they just didn't give a hoot about it. They're not. But now we got a kissing Buzz Lightyear, and now everybody's up in the uproar. It's so different now.
Listen, I'm glad I grew up in the 70s, okay? I'm the eldest, I think, of all of you here. And the one thing about the 70s, yes, it was probably the most depressing decade in film, but it was, to me, the most open decade in film.
It seems so. Like, looking at that, I don't think... Yeah, because if they're hollering about Buzz Lightyear just with a kiss that you miss in half a second, you blink your eyes, and this wasn't protest. Did it give? And serial killers were, like, abundant back then, right, in the 70s?
Yeah.
Oh, good Lord, yeah. Son of Sam. Well, going into the gay side, you had... Gacy was on the prowl.
Yeah. The Black Dude film I did, the Black Dude, that was a gay serial killer.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll talk about that at the end of the show because I want to make sure what's going on with that and what's going on with the feature.
Definitely. We'll be talking about it. And that's a real knife. That's really scary for an actor to trust that.
Oh, this scares the shit out of me. Sorry, I can't look at this. You guys move on.
Yeah. Hey, you looking at it. I spent $3.
I spent 20. Hey.
I spent a nickel.
I got this on DVD and Blu-ray.
I would not let anybody tie me up like that. Just that easy.
Hog tying a stranger, too. Like, you know, just a random trick. I mean, you've got to be into some serious kink and trust to let this happen.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just some random pickup. I mean, my God.
Right.
But he also senses that he's got no choice, too. So it may not be. But,
no.
Okay, here you'll start to see the you're going to see the inserted pieces of, there you go.
The stab wound.
Gay pornography. A couple of frames.
Oh.
And there, did you just see that weird little flash?
Yes.
If you saw that weird little flash, that was hardcore gay insertion porn.
Oh, I didn't see that part.
It's like
maybe out of a second.
What else? I think it's like two frames. It's that fast.
Oh,
which
I missed it.
This one, these, they're defensive. It means you charge your disc. So we had to top to bottom. From the angle of entry, I'd say your killer was right handed.
But how'd you like that when the killer said that? You made me do this. What kind of excuse is that?
But that's an excuse it's all about control. It's all about control.
Yeah.
I saw an acquaintance punch out his girlfriend and break her jaw and blame her for it.
Yeah, it's insane. It's insane. Yeah, it's like it's like a lot of DL guys do that too. Like they have sex with somebody and then they want to beat up the person.
He gives the best beats like Jason Sunday.
Right.
So that you introduced him. That's possible.
That's the brother, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
of,
Brad Davis' brother.
Yeah.
Brad Davis' brother.
And there's Paul Sorvino.
And that guy on the far left right there in the beard, that's Sonny Grasso. In the T-shirt.
Okay.
That's Sonny Grasso.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah, that's Sonny. That's Sonny Grasso right there.
I think Paul Sorvino had some sciatic nerve issues with his and back trouble because he limps throughout this movie. Like, he's got, like, some kind of drop foot issue. It's not like an – it doesn't
yeah.
look like he, like, broke his – but I think he had some back troubles that are causing him to walk this way. That's a guess, but he limps throughout this entire film.
Oh, wow.
And look at this shit. I mean, Paul Sorvino's like, you got a bad number, then we can't prove it's cops.
Right.
He's got a bad dude. You get me names or numbers, otherwise you don't come around like that.
Yeah, he does.
Oh, and
man.
This is taken from, there was this couple of guys, a black and a white guy, who were dressing cops and going around shaking down gay men and gay prostitutes at the time that they had a... arrested shortly before Friedkin started writing the script.
Oh, I didn't know that. That happened?
Oh, yeah, and entrapment, like that kind of stuff, that went on. That was rampant, you know. Yeah, I mean, that was the way that, the way that gay people were treated by not just, you know, regular people, but, by cops was horrendous.
Yeah, and don't forget that the gay community knew who Dahmer was a year before the cops caught him, and they were warning everybody in the clubs to stay away from Dahmer.
Yeah.
I think I remember seeing that when I was young. I think I remember seeing that, like, pictures all over Chelsea.
Paul Vincent was a professor at Columbia University. Lauren Lucas was an actor. James Hope.
Do you still think there's still kind of that bias in the justice system still today, or are they more?
Oh, I think it's gotten better, but in certain areas, without a doubt. You go to a place where I lived, in Bradford, Pennsylvania, in rural Northwest Pennsylvania, you'll run into this type of, you know, thing on a much smaller scale, but yeah, absolutely.
Oh, wow. There was a political guy that just got put in jail. He was a Democrat, and like two black prostitutes died at different times because they were overdosed. And
I saw that.
Killed them. Like, what's the name? I can't remember his name.
I but can't remember his name either.
He was the guy in Florida. He was the Democratic nominee for governor in Florida.
No.
That's a different story.
Gillum.
That's Gillum.
He didn't kill nobody, nobody died with him.
Okay, I was confusing him because he was in a hotel room where somebody overdosed, or he overdosed, or something.
He overdosed.
No, that's somebody else. We are talking about that particular thing, but that's somebody else. That's not Gillum.
Right. And there's the Grindar killer, I think, too, that was around in Canada, I think, right?
Yes.
How do you like how this speech, it sounds as creepy as the one from Apocalypse Now. You're going in there, into the jungle to find him, and you will have no backup, no resistance.
Wow.
The other thing about
this movie is
that, you know, this is Karen Allen, who should have been a much bigger star than she was, because she's great in everything. And this is where she's really hitting her stride. This is the year before Raiders of the Lost Ark, but she had been doing a lot of work, most notably in Philip Kaufman's The Wanderers from a few years before this, and then in Animal House in 78. But she should have been, you know, a much bigger star because she's terrific in everything that she's in. But their relationship in this film gets cut pretty heavily. I think, you know, there's a lot of this movie that's missing. Notoriously, there's about 45 minutes missing from this film. But some of it, I believe, has to do with their relationship and its deterioration over time as he gets immersed in the world of the leather scene. Because this film is all about, you know, identity and what might be hidden inside of you and all of these types of things. So, you know, you have to have her character counterbalance him, you know, as he goes in deep and whatnot. But she really suffers. Her performance suffers, or her character suffers from the decisions that were made when they did finally have to make the edits to the film. Because they had to make the edits to secure an R rating.
Right.
I think that it was going to be more explicit that as the investigation continues, he dabbles more in, you know, in the gay lifestyle, and that stuff I think was too hot for, you know, audiences, and that got cut, and then I think the relationship got cut too.
Okay, so I don't think it's so much that it was too hot, but that you have a supposedly straight character being turned gay, right? You hear that all the time now.
Trans. There's a song coming up here that plays during the scene I'll talk about where it'll explain something that I think it is, that something that he doesn't want to deal with.
Right.
Which is, he fits in too easy for his own good.
Right.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
And
I mean,
here's
something I don't believe
because I don't see any male, gay or straight, leaving their porn collection behind. Especially if it's one that they decided to keep in good condition.
Right.
No, I agree with that.
And there,
that's a
crime
life porn collection.
There
he
is.
I'm John Forbes.
Hi.
Don Scardino.
Who is he?
Or Dan Scardino.
Yeah, somebody left him in my
closet. The star of Squirm.
Of who?
Squirm.
I never heard of Squirm.
Squirm's a terrific movie. He's also the star of Who Knows You're Alone, which is a better-than-average Halloween knockoff.
Oh, I heard of that. Who Knows You're Alone. I saw that.
Squirm is about invading electric worms. No, and I'm not kidding.
Yes, that was a thing. If you left your magazines outside, they would take them and sell them back to resellers or gay bookstores, and they would resell the magazines.
They would. You didn't have Pornhub back then.
No, you didn't.
Yeah.
Now, I have a very close friend of mine by the name of Richard Wandel, and Rich and I have known each other almost 50 years now, and he's former president of GAA, and he, when this movie came out, it was a couple years, I moved in 81, this came out in 80. And he was part of the backlash against this. Talked about it a lot. He just felt that it didn't portray the gay lifestyle in a positive way, and that they were all victims. And he said, you know, it was the drag queens who saved Stonehenge. In this particular thing, there were a bunch of people that found the killer, and none of that is in here. He said, he really said that this is one of the reasons why the gay community really disliked this film.
Well, yeah, because I think because it was so much less representation to show on a real big platform what the gay life scene was like. And so I guess this is one facet of it, but you know what I mean? When you only have one facet
of it.
Yeah,
it is. It's one facet, but that's not the whole gay community. Just like,
right.
No. Yeah. Well, the relationship between Pacino and his neighbors, another thing that's in those missing 45 minutes.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think also Al Pacino did the movie because he wasn't getting any roles back then. And then he, you know, basically decided to do this film. And it was such a controversial, because then he just came off the back of Godfather and all that stuff. And he was like, huge, right?
Don't forget Dog Day Afternoon.
Well,
okay.
Yeah. This comes after Bobby Deerfield, which was not a big hit. And Bobby Deerfield was the first film that sort of tripped up Al Pacino. This one did.
Okay, we got to stop here.
Yeah, here we go. Here's the Powers booth. Love this scene.
Oh, the colors, yeah.
The hanky code.
But that side says you're a hustler, the other says you're a buyer.
On the left side, means you get golden shower. Right side, to proceed.
Who created these things?
The community. The community did.
I know. Wow.
It was very organic. It's like if you showed up and somebody didn't know what it meant, and they asked you, you would tell them, right? And then
it was a way for them to advertise what they were looking for without the cops or the straight world who didn't know it about it, you know.
It was like code.
Exactly, okay. It's code.
God. That's the killer right there, right? I think, right?
I'll bring out when they show the killer again what they do. Look, there's one cop. There is there.
No. There's a yellow handkerchief. What does that mean with the yellow
Chanel
on the left?
Yeah.
Golden yellow line
either
neck.
You like to give it or take it.
What? Oh, like water sports. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, yellow is water sports. And I always found this thing hilarious.
Now he's working out. Am I too fast or behind?
No, you're right there.
No, you're there.
Oh, okay.
And here we go. When he starts fitting in, what song comes on the soundtrack?
You haven't got one.
No, right here. And it's So Easy by Willie DeVille.
So these are, they have to be real pages. I don't see, like, wow. This is brave of Al Pacino to do this film. I give him kind of
absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, well, listen to the. Here was the next level of cruising, which was Central Park After Dark.
Right.
That's what the movie's called?
Well, no,
prison,
that's
yeah.
that was just a... where he is.
Oh, Central Park.
Now.
Oh, yeah, the Rambles, the Shambles, the Rambles, right, they call it, in Central Park?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, Central Park, you know, also Washington Square Park, too.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, yeah, Washington Square wasn't exactly cruising, but there were spots that you would be at in certain parts of Washington Square, and it was very much more of a communal thing. You know, not so much pickup, but communal. And that's right on Hudson. This is basically in the meatpacking district.
Oh, this right now?
Yeah.
Wow, the meatpacking district has totally changed.
Oh, yeah.
Like, wow.
There was even early 70s gay porn called The Meat Rack.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah?
That was that wasn't the guy who did The Boys in the Sand. It wasn't Wakefield, was it?
No. That's not Wakefield.
No, it wasn't Wakefield.
And that brings up, he just brought out another fact, too, that most of these gay bars were family-owned.
Yes.
Really?
When I say family, I don't mean mom-and-pop organizations.
Oh, I know what you mean.
No.
Like, you know, the family, I know what you mean.
So, you know, the interesting thing here is they make this film, and who are they really targeting for this film?
Right.
As an audience?
That's what I'm like. Well, it has a cult following, of course, I'm sure now. But
well, I think part of that is because of the director, because of Pacino. But that wasn't in play at this point when it came out in the 80s. And so,
right.
You know,
oh,
what?
And here's the weird part. The killer is played by the last victim in each of these killings.
Really?
Wow.
I didn't even notice
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Yeah. All the victims, like that guy that's leading him off, he was the he was the killer in the first, in when they tied the guy up in the, but he's going to end up getting killed here. And then
Man.
That guy's going to, so the whole idea is that you never can, this killer could be anybody. He's elusive. So it's an interesting
and
thing.
And you
that
could
they
bring
do,
up
and
another
and
little four letter word that was starting to come in vogue around, 1982.
Okay.
Acquired immune deficiency syndrome.
I was just about
yep.
to say HIV/AIDS came into play during this time, right? That started in the 80s?
Yeah,
this
yeah
is
I
right
think it started around 81.
81 is where you start people out. And then when it was called GRID at the time.
Right, exactly. It was called
GRID.
It's called GRID.
Wow. Like in the 80s? Like
yeah,
early 81, 82?
Because by 82,
yeah, I mean,
83,
so,
then it was called AIDS, acquired immune deficiency.
So, for example, okay, so you know When a Stranger Calls, the movie with Carol Kane, the guy that played
yeah.
the killer in that movie, he died in like 81, like right after that movie came out, and they think that he died of what we would then call AIDS, but he was like one of your first, you know, kind of spread out cases, and they didn't know what to call it. But that was in 81. They didn't have a name for it. And then it became GRID, and then it became AIDS in about 83
wow.
or 4.
Wow. Oh, so now he's bringing
and
it, his sexual tension on himself.
Flint died of AIDS from the transmitting through needles in about 81, wasn't it, Carl?
Really?
I think that was 82, 83.
Yeah.
Mm.
And look right here how overly aggressive he is when he's with his girlfriend, like he's dominate, like he's...
Right.
Has
he put
to
out
not
sexual...
show his heterosexuality.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I think he's getting out of his sexual frustration from the whole night, his sexual tension from the whole night. On his
well,
girlfriend.
He could
so
be extremely, very turned on is also another interpretation.
Right.
You know, that what
yeah.
he's seen all night long is really, you know, turned him on. Is
yeah,
the way sexual
titillating, yeah.
Right
what,
now,
what
we would
of,
call his character what we call in the what we started to call in the 90s on the down low.
Yeah, his character is like the L, like the, yeah, down low, which people think is just a term for black men. But but you know,
oh,
I'm
no,
saying
no, no, no.
Everybody, every race is DL, like they have has a DL. So
oh, for sure, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, Scardino here, I think, really acquits himself well. I mean, he's the one character in this film who is truly, you care about him.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
The one with
sure.
the blonde hair?
Yeah.
Or red
mm-hmm.
hair?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I got to say, before he pops up, who we'll see later, his lover... roommate is played by James Remar, and he's really good in this, in his little bitty part.
Oh, the crazy kind
of
crazy guy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The one
is Remar
roommate.
Coming off of the Warriors.
The Warriors.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Right. Oh, I love the Warriors too, yeah.
They're both,
but,
they're both very volatile roles, but it's interesting how he plays it. And, I mean, he's really good and really believable in both roles.
Right.
So, you know, James Remar, so, he's so good. I mean, he's an underrated actor.
Who was in the interrogation room with, you know what I mean, before the scene comes up? Remember the interrogation part of this movie?
Oh, with the cowboy, with the guy? The...
Yeah. I don't want to give it to anybody who's listening, but
yeah. I'm not sure who that guy is.
He
when it comes
good,
up, I'll
check, getting...
okay?
Yeah.
We're not there yet, of course.
Who the fuck is that guy? But I love in this scene how he's really testing Pacino's character to see if he's a non-violent type.
Oh. Yeah.
Oh, this is
so
radiant. I love this bit, and it makes me laugh because this is where he walks in on precinct night, where you know everybody's got to be dressed like a cop. And if in the original DVD of this, the commentary by William Friedkin, listening to him talk about precinct night and explain precinct night is one of the funniest things I've ever heard in my life.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
They still have that now or no? Like, do they have, like...
I wouldn't be surprised.
Things like that in the SNL.
I mean, yeah, I don't
like,
see why
I
they
haven't
wouldn't.
Seen
I
it.
Mean, you know, any sex club...
Well, yeah,
have, you know, like
any place that deals in fantasy would have something like that.
Like, I know the
see,
place...
See, hyper-hearted
beef. The only place I've been that's, like, hardcore like this was the Eagle. Or is the Eagle.
Okay.
Because a friend of mine
we
who's
actually
a bartender. It only been there like twice.
Yeah, he's got the wrong costume.
Attitude.
Nice.
They're going to kick him out. Is this the guy, right? Is that the roommate? Was that an actual club they were in?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
That was part of the
problem.
They got them to build this club for them to allow them to use the gate, the leather bar community in the film. So they got Freakin' to build them a club. But now you can see right there, cow cuts and all that. Yeah, the meatpacking district.
Yeah, that's the meatpacking district.
Absolutely.
See that symbol on the wall right there?
Yeah.
Man and man, that was another way of them having the quiet code. You know.
Oh, he's thinking about that guy he just met right up before he came there.
Yeah.
Yep.
He's thinking about the other guy he just saw tonight.
Yep. He's lost.
Yeah,
in that
he's
sauce.
At the part where he wants to play, but.
Yeah, his.
Well, and I think we're getting ready to get into the. I don't know if this is the scene. No, this isn't the scene. This is the garment district, dude. Right now.
The garment district.
Okay, so that cat right there was in Boys in the Band.
Right.
Not
right now
this
with the
guy.
Show?
Not the, so the guy that's walking out, not the guy with the beard, but the other one that he's walking with.
Oh, okay.
That guy.
The one that's locking the door?
Yeah, that actor.
Okay.
Yeah, the one that's locking the door. That actor was in Boys in the Band, William Friedkin's movie from 1970. He was also on Dark Shadows in its last story arc. He had an actually
that
role.
That's not John Carlin. That's not John Carlin. That's
Friedkin showing that most gay men had two lives back then. One life was their normal day, 9-to-5 life. And then there's second life in the bars.
Right.
Right, I guess. But it was just about sex and hookups and just raw animalistic. I guess that's what I guess society made you feel like, that you got down to, like, I guess you couldn't really live. Like, you couldn't be that open in that period, right, in the late 70s, early 80s, that much or no? I'm not sure.
Well,
I mean, you could, but it was not.
If you're talking Christopher Street, if you're talking certain parts of the meatpacking district, it was quite open. You know, they used to call it the gay ghetto. You know,
but
it was the gay ghetto.
In society. But like in regular day, like you said, in daytime, like
the
job at UPS or something like that.
Right, right. You know, and that's why the double life. And trust me, it was very much like that. Now these porn films. You know, this is what we were talking about. That were cut out of the theatrical.
Right.
Actually, what was cut out of the theatrical were the flashes in that first murder, you actually see the penetration. This stuff was in the movie. Now there might be moments here during this violent scene that were a little hot that were cut too, but the scenes in the first murder sequence or the shots of the penetration, that those were definitely cut out of the theatrical version, and they're really brief flashes. They're barely there, 2 frames, 3 frames. Maybe.
Subliminals.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, I see the background. So do you like the film and editing back then, or you like it better now? The way... Okay, hold on. Here we go.
Then, because it's more organic, you got your hand on material, and it's a different... It's a
different
thing. Yeah, see, there were some penetration there, very brief again. You saw it again.
Mm-hmm. Why do all the apartments look dirty?
Because they were.
Yeah, and they still are, I guess.
Well, part of it is the lighting. Part of it is they wanted to make it dirty. This is another thing that the gay community had real difficulty with in terms of...
Yeah, because in real life, gays do not live like that, like most don't.
Exactly.
You know, you have very much great style, everything. You know, most gays like ultra-modern, most up-to-date stuff,
well,
even
you
if
know,
you're poor.
Yeah, in the 80s, I worked at Carl Fisher in the East Village. And I was up in the Choral Band and Orchestra department. And 60 to 70% of all our clientele was gay.
Mm.
I had a very close friend of mine by the name of Rusty, who knew that I was doing, that well paid. He'd take me out to dinner, and we'd end up at a drag club or something like that. I had no problem with that. I had a blast. But it wasn't this stuff. It wasn't, you know, this is why the gay community was really against this film, because it was all about squalor.
Right, it was. It was all about the guts and the grime of the dark side of gay sex. What's this actor's name? I see him everywhere in old movies.
Gosh, I don't know. I just watched Straight Time the other day with Dustin Hoffman, and he's in that. But I can't tell you his name.
I know, but that's one of those guys you see everywhere, but you don't know.
Speaking of water sports, now we're on to the part of police work, which we call the pissing tower. Commissioner pisses on the head detective pisses on the undercover agent.
Okay, here we go.
Oh, this is where Al Pacino cuts loose in this one. He just cuts loose.
What?
He cuts loose in this thing. This is where he does with the rag and huffing and dancing. Yeah.
This is Pacino dancing.
They got a lot of appetite.
No, at least you would hear this kind of dance music in the clubs back then.
Yeah.
Oh, that's where fisting was introduced.
Well, I mean, in maybe a straight film.
Look, the fisting.
Bob Chin showed some fisting. I saw fisting in a Roberta Finley movie from 75 or so. So.
Oh, there was another. Oh, there is a guy fighting
him up.
He was turned on by.
Yeah. And
he likes the guy by the pinball
this
machine.
This was cut from the R-rated release.
Yeah, his name's Skip Lee. Yeah. That dude. The other night, I saw him back. He's one more guy.
You're kind of going in and out.
Yeah. And you notice that at least some of, you know, they look out after each other. And that's the one thing about community. And this was a subset of the gay community. So, you know, this particular subset was fine with this film because they loved their loved livestock. And as Stephen said, that a lot of this was, you know, regular patrons.
Wow.
Yeah. And a lot of the people who were in the leather scene back then looked at this as a nostalgic piece.
He's on, what is he, from Poppers or Seeds or?
Yeah, amyl nitrate.
If it's on the tank, it's probably glue.
Yep. Poppers. Poppy.
He's looking at the one he
really
likes.
If you're watching
likes,
this on the DVD
it?
And not the Blu-ray or Amazon, you're going to see some horrible color changes the freaking made to the freaking movie.
Yeah, I'm running into that now. Trust me. I'm definitely running into that now.
Yeah. The Blu-ray is basically the original theatrical cut and release. What they have on Amazon is his revisited director's cut.
Okay.
That is true.
And I am very iffy on
Freakin'
color choices for those scenes. Oh, three card money.
Yeah, wonderful.
Was Surgical Trans back then?
Oh, was really good at it and taught me how to break it, and I wouldn't.
Could you get surgery back then to change genders or no?
Oh yeah, there was surgery.
Doris Wishman made a movie called Let Me Die a Woman that actually has real footage of gender reassignment surgery occurring, and it is something to see.
And
oh,
Shocking Asia has it too.
The other thing too is
love and marriage.
Let's talk about the first transgender person just briefly, and that would be Christine Jorgensen. At least the best known. And that was back
then. And there's Ed O'Neill.
50s or
60s. Yeah, I was saying, married with children. Wow, he was so young back then.
Yeah.
They're looking at knives, so they think that
because
kid this
is
the
killer.
Well,
it is. Of knife.
Yeah. Book over there.
The piers. Also a big gay area.
Yeah.
Well, that would be more down at Hudson Yards, I think. Not that, but then.
Well, like I said during the bag murders, this is where a lot of the body parts were found in the Hudson Bay.
Right.
Wow. Did they ever find the person or the people?
No, they didn't. It just stopped.
Wow. Now they're going to set this poor kid. He, was he the killer? He wasn't the killer.
No.
No, huh? Yeah.
I think I felt sorry for this guy in this part.
Yeah, you're supposed to, because this is really showing how... Well, after watching this little bit right here, I wasn't shocked. When was it, about 91 in the 90s when that poor bastard got sodomized by a cop with a toilet plunger in the New York precinct?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. By a group of them, yeah.
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 That boggles my mind, people do that shit. I mean, like, just boggles my mind.
I don't even understand it. I mean, policemen were doing that.
Yeah, it's called prejudice.
Yeah.
It's called, you know, I mean, look.
Oh, yeah. Police brutality.
You know, look at our situation right now and look at the trans, what's happening with our trans brothers and sisters. And all of that. I mean, seriously, it, you know, this type of,
right.
You know, and it doesn't matter if you're any type of, you know, demonized minority. And trust me, there's
mm-hmm.
a lot of us, you know, in terms of if you're disabled, you know, mental handicaps, you know, black, whatever the case would be. And this is definitely...
Yeah, any minority, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think
and
Al Pacino
police.
Was going to go through it. Well, okay. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Right. There's an amount of cursing in there.
Okay, you're breaking up a little bit, Steve. Just want you to know.
Oh, sorry. I just said, Jesus Christ, look at the amount of cops bursting in there.
Oh, yeah.
I know, right?
It's like a clown car.
And right, y'all pointed
well, that
out that's Ed O'Neill.
Which one?
Right. The guy that's in the
yeah,
chair.
Yeah, that's O'Neill.
With his foot
yeah.
up. Ed O'Neill from Mary. Okay. I didn't know if y'all pointed that out yet.
Oh, yeah. I said that when he was at the dinner table. The love and marriage.
Oh, yeah, right. Okay, right. Sonny Grosso kind of looks like
what Brian Palma
looks like now.
What would have happened if the cops hadn't burst in that door?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He was, like, upset that they busted in.
Yeah.
Oh, here we go. This is the famous... this
Tyson's
guy.
Tyson's a chicken's ass.
Right.
So I mean, this didn't make any sense.
It makes sense because they actually did this for real. You know why?
So they just got a big black, naked black man, cowboy hat to just slap people.
You know, some of us might like that. Yeah, I don't fucking know. I never really got that scene. You know, it takes you out of
the idea.
Well,
you know,
why does he have to be naked?
Like, right. Well, I think it's the whole idea, like, do you pick your feet in Poughkeepsie from the French Connection, which was something they did to throw the person off. I mean, they wouldn't, I mean, they'd really shock them. They wouldn't know what. This is sort of that writ large. I don't know if it really makes much sense, but it is what it is.
To me,
it
feels
okay.
racist. I don't know what it feels like because I'm like, I mean, what? Like, I don't think cops did that.
Not, I don't know if they did this specifically. I mean,
yeah,
this
like,
is the whole thing.
Like, why did he have to be in?
Where do you get this person? I mean, you have to hire a person
right,
to do this.
Right.
And how do you do this? How do you do this without, without like, you know, Tinder or Grindr or how can you find this?
Right.
Hey, we need you to come in tonight and slap somebody.
Right. Right.
That would take a few days to find somebody and get them to do this.
Yeah. Right. I, you know. It just didn't make sense in the movie to me. I'm like, okay, he could be a big clothed cop and do that. Like, I, why he had to be, what, he wanted to turn him on and then slap? Like, I don't know what the whole, or if they were
right,
trying to, I don't know. I really don't know what that was about.
Right, because, I mean, like, yeah, that shit costs extra.
Right. And I felt bad for him, though, this guy.
Yeah, this is humiliating. Yeah. I mean, this is humiliating to him and his character. And again, it's supposed to be. I mean, it's supposed to show how awful these people are. And how
yeah,
gay people at the time really didn't have a whole lot of allies outside of their own community.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think Al Pacino really liked this guy. Something he liked, like, you know, it was kind of like his type.
We lost Steven,
you know,
so we need to bring him back in.
Who?
Steven has, was
Steven,
raptured, what we like to call raptured. He'll be calling back in momentarily.
Oh, okay.
You're back with us, Steven? Yeah, you're there.
Oh, yeah. Okay, boys and girls, it's time for Cop 101. They actually did do that with, like, in that scene. You know why?
Why?
Imagine going to your lawyer after they did that and saying, some big motherfucker with a goddamn cowboy hat and wearing nothing but a Speedo beat the shit out of me. Would they believe you? Would the judge believe you?
Wow.
Oh, shit, that,
that
makes sense, Stephen.
Yeah.
Right. Thank you for explaining that logic. I mean, I didn't even see it from that view.
Well, that's just the... that's what the cop told Friedkin, that they actually did do anything like that. Grosso did.
She reminds me of Margot Kidder, right? The actress?
Yeah.
Yes. And she also,
I know it's not her, but
me,
she kind of reminds me.
Yeah. Her, Brooke Adams, Margot Kidder, and Jessica Harper all kind of have a sameness to them.
70s
yeah,
face.
And I like every single one of those actresses a lot, too, by the way.
Yeah.
Oh, his keys are on the right side. That means he's dominant now.
Oh, is the keys on the right side? That's what it means, dominant?
Yeah,
okay.
What, right, that side, the right side means you're dominant, left side means you're submissive.
But why was he tied up in a submissive state when they caught him opening the door?
That's the question, you know, they don't answer, you know.
Is he noticing he's changing?
Yeah, she's definitely noticing
he's
changing. He's still in denial no matter what.
And he has a little mini meltdown here as a character. This is very telling the Al Pacino character, where he says, "I'm going through changes. I can't explain it," and he almost breaks down crying because he's like, he's not liking what he's finding out about himself. He's in deep conflict. Maybe so.
Yeah.
Sometimes you only get the one chance.
See, you got to find another way. You got to find someone else. We got to get me out of here.
Somebody almost fell.
And I am just telling you here.
Plus, deeply disturbed about how they treated that guy
insane.
In there, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think he actually liked that guy.
Yeah, he did.
Oh, yeah, he's trying to get out. For the inner turmoil, there's some good writing, I think, in this character.
Yeah, and unusual for a Friedkin film, he wrote this movie. He adapted this novel. Friedkin generally does not write his own movies. But he did take, he gets full screenwriting credit on this one.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And if you read the novel, the character, Pacino's character is an extreme homophobe.
Mm. And then he slowly turns gay in the book as well. I mean,
well,
yeah,
in the book,
say about,
well,
that's what they say about
towards the end,
homophobe.
What happens at the
right.
end, but it's totally different than the movie.
Ah.
But, you know, wait. All extreme homophobes are hiding something deep down, I can guarantee you.
Yeah, that's a lot of that's true, yeah. That's very true.
They just don't like what they see in the mirror.
Ask Roy Cohen, right,
mm-hmm.
Carl?
Yeah. Roy
absolutely.
Cohen.
That man was Roy Cohen was one of absolutely the worst Americans ever to be produced in this country. Just a terrible person.
Yep.
Mm.
Do you know who we're talking about, Robert?
No.
Roy Cohn? Roy Cohn was a lawyer who was part of the, he was gay, but very, very homophobic, also Jewish and very anti-Jewish. Who was involved with the McCarthyism. He also was, he's basically involved now because when Trump started out, Roy Cohn was his mentor.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah, he was in decline whenever Trump was ascending in the 80s. Roy Cohn died of AIDS, I think in like 91 or so.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
He was just a self-loathing, horrible, horrible person whose bitterness just was curdling, just awful, just a really
wow.
awful, dark character in American history.
They should do a movie on him.
Yeah. Oh, they have.
They did.
They have?
Citizen Cone. Also, Angels in America.
Oh, I saw that series.
Yeah, he's part of that too.
Is this guy famed? Did he have any success? This guy who's the coined the killer as an actor?
No.
And here is the guy that, for story purposes, is the killer.
Mm.
Yeah.
what park or what? Where is this area?
Okay, I'm not sure. Not sure.
Okay.
It's not Central Park, is it? No.
It looks like it could be. No, that's not Central.
No, it looks like Harlem, maybe?
Washington Heights. I think it's Washington Heights.
Yeah, Washington Heights.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying, like, in that area.
Now, that's not
is that
Central.
Columbia? Huh?
That's Columbia. That's Columbia.
Yeah, it's Columbia University.
Well, that's not Washington Heights, but
no, that's.
But remember, they could shoot it up in Washington Heights and then do this scene. You never know with film.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah. Dodge.
Yeah, that is definitely Columbia. One
yeah.
of the great things back in the '80s, when I was in the '80s, Columbia University had probably the worst football team, and you could go into Columbia University and go see their football team for free. And
really?
and you could get hot dogs. You could get 3 hot dogs for $2, and I would do that every so often on a Saturday. Because it was a cheap day out.
Right.
And back then, you were into cheap. Trust me. I was making, what, $2.75 when I first started a week at Carl Fisher back in the '80s.
Is it me or
wow.
Dino's character looking kind of pervy with the way he's stalking that guy?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. You know, as I said, this is one of the reasons that the gay community didn't like it because, you know, you have it shows his transformation in a downward spiral, right? It's not positive,
right? It's like anything gay is seedy and
right,
just,
exactly.
You know, just
and that was the main argument here. That was definitely the main argument.
Yeah, that was no redeeming character
yeah.
in
with the exception of
well,
Scardino.
Well, his neighbor's a redeeming character, and the everybody
oh, yeah, right.
in a leather bar but him just seems nice and friendly.
Yeah.
And they know each other.
Yeah.
There's no, as they call it, gay predators. Like, what was that short, Carl? Oh, the child molester. Yeah, the one thing the teenage boy must fear most is the homosexual.
You know, and a picture of Jesus.
He just broke into his house. I mean, his home.
Well, if anyone won't try to stop him, all he has to do is flash his badge. I'm a cop.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
I doubt he has his badge right now.
Well, he has to be undercover. If he flag his badge, he'll tell other people in the community, right? If it's not,
yeah.
if he's not, so he has to, I guess, to do this.
Augusta, City of God, under resolving the power game.
Yep. World and Image by Jung.
The Red Dragon.
Yeah. Derek the leather stuff.
He got a lot of leather. He's the one. I wonder if Robert De Niro himself did it play with his sexual identity playing this role. You know what I mean? Because actors go into
you mean Pacino.
The character.
Pacino.
Yeah, Al Pacino. What did I say, Robert De Niro?
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, Pacino. I'm sorry, Pacino.
Pacino had a problem with it. That's why he seems off throughout the whole movie. Is that once he started getting into the character, he felt weird about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because me as an as an actor myself, it's like when you're a method actor, you go into the character. You know what I mean? And then you sort of have to like become the character.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, this is not Pacino's first gay role. Let's not forget Dog Day Afternoon.
Yeah, but this is where he has to actually give a performance and not play a over-the-top character.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Pacino's character's not being subtle about following him.
Mm-hmm.
No. He's known somebody went in his house, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure.
Yeah, Carl will know because he'd be like, they moved my records like 4 inches to the left from where I fucking had them. What the hell's going on?
Oh, and he's looking at him.
And the fan's not on now.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Who looks like a killer in that fucking scene?
Oh.
Well, in case you're wondering, this is the guy who does the killer's voice whenever there's heard.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, him?
Yeah, listen.
Yeah.
Oh, so he's listening to his dad tell him kill the gays?
Mm-hmm.
So he knows his son is a psychotic killer? If y'all hear anything in the background, I'm fixing something to eat.
Oh, that's okay.
Yeah.
I'm munching on something. So.
But, yeah, it insinuates that his father molested him as a kid.
Ah.
That's why he had to picture him as father, but the father was torn out of it.
You know, all the times I've seen this film, I missed that part. it went over my head.
Well, you know, that's part of the reason we have Stephen with us today, because he knows his film quite well, and he's been pummeling for me to do this for years, 7 years now.
Is this what? Oh.
I can appreciate the film. I think it's well done.
Right.
I still don't like it.
Yeah.
I'm never going to like the movie.
Yeah. Who is this guy? I've seen him around.
Not sure.
What is his
that's
name?
That's James Remar. This is the first time we get to see him on screen.
Oh, the first time. Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Patrick, I'm sorry that somehow you got muted. You there?
No, I was.
No, he's looking at the film, I guess.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny how many little roles, big little roles Remar was in through the years before he really became like a sort of a lead in the 90s.
Right. That was the one that was in The Warriors, right? I think.
Right.
Yeah, he was
Ajax.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was in a couple of other Walter Hill films, too.
Oh.
Extreme Prejudice.
Mm-hmm. Why was he attacking him? I forget.
Well, he heard him like beat him earlier in the movie.
Mhm.
And now he sees how scared he is.
Hey, that's an M11, and that goes to 33rd and Broadway. I have no idea where he is now.
Yeah.
But this is all New York.
Yeah, definitely it is. Yeah, but.
Oh, he's back at the park.
Okay, there's one thing we have not mentioned, and that's the score. And I really like the score.
Oh, God,
yeah. Sort of doesn't fit to this guy. Right?
The soundtrack, if you can find it on eBay, goes for like in the hundreds now.
Oh, really?
The score's by wow. Jack Nietzsche, right? I think Jack Nietzsche does the score.
Yeah, Jack Nietzsche.
Yeah.
If you light up my life, fame. Oh, God, help us all.
He was a good arranger for soundtrack work. You know, he always got crack musicians to pull them off, and, you know, usually his scores are really good.
I actually like the scores of the 70s films, the jazz influence and sort of like avant-garde stuff that was being done. It wasn't until the mid-70s
when John Williams hooked up with Spielberg, it got boring again. But like
John Williams has a really great score for Robert Altman's Images that has some Japanese flute intercut in it that's really, really excellent. Very unusual.
Well, for me, it's The Long Goodbye, which, of course, he also did for Altman. His work for Altman was great,
correct,
but then he hooked up with Spielberg, and it got... I mean, it's really good work, but it's just boring to me anyway. But that's...
Well, movie music and got boring in the 80s.
I do dig John Williams' score for Dracula and the Fury.
Oh, he did? Oh, I like that. I love Dracula. Bram Stoker's Dracula you're talking about, right?
No, I'm talking about Langella from 79.
Yeah, Langella from 79.
Oh, okay. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a fantastic score, I think.
Oh, here we go. It's going to get down to it.
You notice that they're both sitting in the same way on the bench and basically doing the same thing.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, there's a lot of that going on in this movie. And earlier in the movie, in a scene with Karen Allen, it's hinted that Al Pacino, there's something going on between he and his own father. There's something in their relationship that's strained or not right. Because she talks to him earlier, and he sort of drifts off, and the music gets really creepy. And so, yeah, this movie goes a great length to draw the parallels, you know, between his character and this character. And that's done through, again, using each film's victim as the killer next time, or vice versa, or however it works, by keeping that elusive and never quite nailed down. Ultimately, at the end of this movie, the question is, was Pacino the killer? I mean, that's what Pacino could be the killer because of what happens in the final moments of the movie with the roommate. But yes, and I love how this movie does that, how it keeps them mirrored.
See right there with the same flick, the butt's right next to him.
So he's crying himself as the killer now.
Hips or lips. I love that line. Whenever and how big are you? Party size, right.
Yeah, nowadays that means something different than it did back then in 1980.
Don't worry, though.
Party size, right?
Thank you.
There it was.
And this scene will be recreated in every 80s action film in the 80s. Except that instead of taking down their pants, they would whip out their guns.
And then here they do another thing where they cover his voice up, or they use the killer's voice. They in the midst of this, in the middle of the scene where this character, the killer, his voice changes to his dad's voice at the end, and it's very interesting.
So now they got. They're only giving him 8 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it was just some gay guys. It wasn't like real people that got killed.
Right. 8 years for killing like 7 people.
And look what sunglasses he's still wearing.
Yep.
Yeah. He had changed.
Yeah, he's a dick
man.
Now.
All addressed to
Yeah, this is where you find out that his dad's dead and he never sent any of his letters, and then we're here at this chaos that looks a lot like Taxi Driver at the end.
See, he's been for years, so that scene of him talking to his father was
in his mind. I caught that right away. One of the things I want to bring out now is, you know, how this is so squalor. But think about all the New York films of this era. It's all the same. New York is a fucking cesspool. And we've talked about this, you and I, as far as the New York Board of Tourism and that sort of thing would come down on films like this. And they certainly did on this one. Too. It wasn't just the gay community who was against this film.
Yeah. I mean, because even if you think about a movie like Saturday Night Fever, that movie's pretty gross. I mean, in terms of it, where it's set and how, you know, everything's a dump. It looks gross. It looks like, you know, everybody's cramped. You know, there's trash all over the place. Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
And a subway is just graffiti laden and looks like, you know, there's a hobo pissing in the corner and, you know.
Well, the tourism board came in 1980 and I was in New York in the 80s and the person I worked for, Carla Pinza, who I like to call the Puerto Rican equivalent of Attila the Hun, she got a guest spot on The Equalizer. You take a look at The Equalizer and how it portrayed New York. It was brutal.
Wow.
Right here is another big complaint about the gays, and that this was the real complaint. is that almost 99% of the gay murders was written off as lovers' quarrels.
Yes.
And then we show another shot of another person walking into the bar, like the killer may have gotten away, or who killed this guy. You know, that could have been, you know, since we only saw him from the back,
like I said, which they don't, it explicitly states that Patino's character does become the killer. He takes up the killer's mantle.
Oh, wow.
Right. And that's, I think that does come through in the film. You know, even with losing all of that footage, I still think that is conveyed relatively well in the film. And, you know, despite all of its issues with representation, and which I completely understand, I still think this is a really effective and creepy thriller, police procedural thriller. Even given all of its issues.
And trust me, it has more issues than a magazine rack, okay? I'm just saying.
Oh, and now she's wearing his glasses and his hat.
Yeah. And if you look even the age metaphor, it's sort of stating that he's given her.
Hold on 1 second. We'll be right back.
I mean, you know, there wouldn't really be an AIDS metaphor because this is way before AIDS. But, you know, the whole thing that he still has the leather outfit with him. If he's done with the job, you think, oh, I don't need this anymore. But he still got it. And the 1,000-yard stare into the mirror, like the end of Bullet.
And he's looking at us like, you know, don't you?
Yeah.
And the exact same shot as the opening of the film.
Yep. Well, at least I got good.
I love that smash set. Oh, possessory credit too. William Friedkin's cruising.
Jerry Weintraub production. Al Pacino. In down.
Karen Allen. Oh, that looks like almost looks like the credits that I can feel. The style of it.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
That's who it is. Gene Davis.
Well, what do you guys think? We got through it. Now at least I don't have to watch it again.
It went pretty fast.
Yeah.
Points were brought out.
No, I think it was a very pivotal film. It's I guess one of the most controversial films, I guess, of recent, you know, of our time, I guess, in movie history.
Yeah, definitely.
Do you think it was needed to be made, or what do you think? What is your opinion?
It did not need to be made. No, it didn't. I agree. I still have that mindset that this was very damaging
to the LGBTQ community.
And that's
and
why
this
I
is when I would pet your head and look at you and go, "You sweet, sweet, naive Carl."
I hate to tell you this, I prefer Windows to this. I do.
I haven't seen Windows yet, so I gotta look up that.
And why is it, I think this needed to be made is, yeah, it does have on film the callous way that the cops did treat the gay community like that. Like I said, there was, I mean, people still don't believe that a cop would give a victim back to fucking Jeffrey Dahmer.
Right. That right there is crazy. But, you know, but we're, I guess we're off of the subject now. But, yeah, I mean, but also I heard that this film, now the film is done, I created this film called The Black Doodler. And this the film was inspired a little by that serial killer that I did based my film on. That's what I found out as when I was doing research and everything and stuff like that. That's a little bit of part of, because the Black Doodler was happening in the mid-70s, but it was in California.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and where can we see that, Robert? What's going on with your film? I know the short is done.
Oh,
and
right
you're
now
putting
it's
in-
still being... it's been submitted to what you call it, and I also have a distributor, which I can't mention yet. That
glad to hear
looks like we're going to definitely do business together with the film. And the film is about a serial killer called. I don't know if anybody you do. You, I know Carl knows, but anyone else knows about the Black Doodler?
I don't.
Patrick?
No, I don't.
Okay.
No.
Tell them about the Black...
Okay. The Black Doodler was an actual serial killer in the mid-70s, I think, from 74 to 75, where 15 gay men were killed, or gay people were killed, and this guy, how he used to lure his victims were, he would go into bars, and he was African-American, and he would draw his victim, and the victim would come over and be, you know, pleased with the drawing and kind of flattered. And then somehow, you know, and I guess the doodler was attractive to them or something like that, and so they would go back to where, in the woods or to the apartment. He would kill them, like stab them, like how this film, you know, do a serial killing like that. Some he would have sex with, some he didn't. But what I found out that he would, of course, he was a closeted case, but they never solved the murder, and they never, they knew who the guy was, but they couldn't arrest or take anybody back then because nobody stepped up to, for a lineup or anything. Or because back then it was like very taboo to come out as gay. And so there have been rumors that, you know, it was a big celebrity that got away, but they never came out to point out the killer or whatever because they didn't want their identity to be known that they were gay. And so there was rumors that it was either Rock Hudson it's a famous Chamberlain, Richard Chamberlain? Richard Chamberlain. One of those two had an incident with the Black Doodler. And, but they never arrested the Doodler, and it was never really found justice. And it, like within 1 year, it killed about maybe 15 people, they suspect.
God damn.
And it was during that. Yeah. So it was a very weird thing as I went to do research on it because it was
It was very weird because it was two domino effects. First, you had to admit that you were gay, and second, you had to admit that you were going back with a black guy and having sex with a black guy. So it was like two things that were like, especially in the 70s, that a lot of the victims didn't come forward, and all of the victims were basically white. So that was that dynamic. So I did a movie based on that because during that time, I think it was in 2016, I was just doing research about black serial killers, and I was like, I never really heard of a really strong black serial. Not until now they're coming out. They were like very prolific black serial killers, but this killer was the first killer that came up that I did research on. I was very fascinated by it. This serial killer, and I did a short film on it. So, definitely, I definitely tell you when the film is coming out and what platforms it's coming on, because it's actually possibly going to some cool platforms on things for the public to see. And
well, definitely let me know, Robert. No question. We'll do whatever we can to promote it.
Oh, definitely. And Carl saw it already, so.
It's good.
He knows about
it. I'm not joking. I wouldn't say that, Robert, unless I meant it. It's good. It's solid. It's very solid.
Yeah, and that was a big problem with the AIDS, too, is that if you came out and said you had AIDS, that would mean, well, I'm just going to quote, no one's intended, the first article I ever read about AIDS was in Hustler after Althea died, and he said, as long as the minor public believes that AIDS is something that junkies, niggers, and queers get, nothing is ever going to be done about it. And sadly, it was true. They didn't care.
No. I want to mention
the film. They got their straight case that they were able to do anything about it.
I want to mention a film right now. We were talking about, you can't say that you're gay or anything like that. I just want to mention a film. I don't know if Robert knows it. I'm pretty sure that Patrick knows it. I know that you know it, Stephen. And it's called Victim. And it was made in 1962. And it stars Dirk Bogarde. And directed by Basil Dearden, British film. And the story is basically that you have this middle-aged married barrister who is basically just married, for show, but is gay, and he's being blackmailed. And at that point in time, you couldn't say the word, gay was not the operative word. You couldn't say the word homosexual in films. You couldn't portray gay in a positive outlet. And at that point in time, being homosexual was against the law, and you could be castrated, chemically castrated, like Alan Turing. Okay? Ooh. And in 1962, it's the first film that ever mentions homosexual by name. It's the first film that shows a gay person in a sympathetic light, and it's a very, very important film. So if you don't know that, Robert, you need to track that one down.
Well, don't forget all the adaptations of Children's Hour, too.
Right, but of course, the Children's Hour was absolutely cut up to shreds. They wouldn't allow a lot of that. And to be honest,
the first film that I know of that was made in America that had it was the Boston Strangler.
Right, exactly, and you're absolutely right about that.
You're right. But during that time, so that would be interesting to do the progression of homosexual being. How it progressed in Hollywood and film. What was the first
actually the first first film that referenced homosexuality. Like Catalina Roof or
Well, that's a good question. Now I do have to mention something. I mentioned briefly that my friend Richard Wandel, he was president of the GAA. Through Richard, I met the gentleman who wrote The Celluloid Closet. And he and I actually had a couple of short conversations. And that's Vito Russo, for those that don't know. But Vito talks about that there were silent films, pre-code films, that definitely had gay characters and bisexual characters. But once the Hays Code comes in, then that all stops.
Until John Huston said, screw you, I'm making the Maltese Falcon just like the book. And he had Peter Lorre as a gun cell.
Right, and there was a lot of you know, you had the sissy too. You had Franklin Pangborn.
Yeah.
You had who played stereotypical feminine males, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And the whole bit about gun soul is just that the Hays Code didn't understand what that term meant. They just thought it meant a higher gun. They didn't know it was a derogatory term for a homosexual. You had those kinds of characters coded throughout film history. Like Carl was saying, the sissy character, the effeminate character was, you know, they got around that a lot. Gunsel was just sort of an accident that got through because they misunderstood what that word meant.
Wow.
Yep.
I got to look up Victor.
Now, talking about the history of gay film, I tried desperately to get Dan Kramer on, and Dan's a friend of the podcast, and he is an out gay Jewish and actually former Orthodox Jew that has done a number of films. And he and I are planning, hopefully, the first week of July to get back to that, so that we'll have one more podcast for Pride Month, though it'll be after Pride Month, but on the history of gay representation in film. So I've been wanting to do that show for a number of years. So we have just a couple more minutes before we go into overtime, so I do want to just say that very briefly. Actually, 1 minute now. So, Patrick, do me a favor and give us a little information about what you're doing over at the Apollo Drive-In and the Oklahoma Film Society and such. What's going on?
Well, next month, July, screening. I don't know when it's going to be exactly, but the Oklahoma Film Society, I think we're going to be screening Walter Hill's The Warriors. We spoke a lot about it tonight because James Remar's in it. And after taking a little bit of a break, I'm going to start publishing new essays at ApolloTwin.com starting on July the 1st, which is Friday. And I am first going to be visiting the early films of Michael and Roberta Finley. And so on Friday, I'm dropping an essay on Michael Finley's first solo effort, The Sin Syndicate.
Oh, have fun with that stuff. Steven, tell them a little bit about how you got me to watch the Flesh trilogy.
Oh, yeah. It was, I forget, wasn't it on Thanksgiving?
Yeah, I think it was.
Yeah, and I got you to watch the second of the Flesh trilogy, and your mind was just blown.
Yep, to say the least.
Yeah, you know what? There were two guys in that bathroom, Carl, and they were doing a lewd act. What did they do? They asked me to join them.
Patrick knows. Patrick understands.
Oh yeah. Yes,
so, Stephen, tell us a little bit about what you're planning and your what you're doing on your network.
Well, me and you, we still got the first two parts of A Savage Season we're going to go through. And on the 4th of July, we're going to be doing alligator. Why? Because there's nothing more American than alligators living in the sewers and a balding...
Robert Forster. Balding
Robert Forster.
How's my hair? How's my hair?
I can connect with that. I'm from Florida, so...
So what is the name of your network, and how can they find you, Stephen?
KSDAD Radio. You can go on Blog Talk and find it, or you can listen to us on a lot of major pod. Not we're on AOL podcasts. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and pretty much every major one that will let me put it on there, and that's most of them.
Well, there you go. Now I'm going to do a quick housekeeping here and tell you what's going on Deviant Legion. So let me just get to the episodes here. Here we go. Tomorrow, and by the way, you're welcome to come on for this next one, Stephen. We welcome back author Mike House, or as we like to say, House. And Mike is a wonderful author. He specializes in spaghetti westerns. He's got a 3-volume set out that you can buy, and they're incredible magazines. And he's just working on a new one now on Eurotrash. That's a new thing that he's into. So we're going to be talking about that. And that is tomorrow at 8 p.m. Then on Friday, Adam is going to be hosting the Cathode Ray Mission. And they're going to be doing a deep dive into the Honeymooners. I know the 1950s sitcom with Art Carney and Jane Meadows and, of course, Jackie Gleason. And then on Saturday, we're going to be doing a commentary watch on a film that I love to watch during July 4th weekend. Stephen hates it. I don't care, but Doc, otherwise known as Eric Gomland, and I are going to be doing a commentary watch on Uncle Sam. Yeah. Stephen, I got it. I was able to do it, so to you too, okay? And so that's what we got planned. All right. So Robert, I want to thank you very, very much for joining us. It was wonderful to have each one of you. You made this much easier on me because I let you guys talk and I basically shut up and like tried not to watch the film.
Yep.
All right. Well,
and he just said that they had better coiffed hair than him back then.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, I don't know.
I'm on the scraggly end. I am not coiffed like Pacino in that. All right? So, guys, take care. We want to thank everyone for listening and for watching the film with us. And let us all basically at this point say good night.
Happy
good
night. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Thanks, guys.